Welcome to another Focus podcast, the place where we inspire, motivate, empower, and impact. I'm your host, Singing Lisa. Thank you for stopping by. Dr. Shiva Akula is an infectious disease doctor in New Orleans, Louisiana, and he shares important information about the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine and the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. He discusses the history of vaccines and their effectiveness, myths behind the fears and concerns of many who are undecided about getting the vaccine, and the facts that identify the current and developing vaccines being manufactured. It is his hope through this presentation to increase the knowledge and understanding of the vaccination process and to encourage those undecided to join those who have taken the vaccine to restore health to all. So let's listen in to Dr. Akula's presentation.
And I'm going to go ahead and get started with sharing a little PowerPoint presentation that sort of gives a brief information, and perhaps, you know, we can open for, you know, some discussion. And so bear with me, and I'm trying to use the technology. So as you guys know, I think, you know, the COVID-19 has become a pandemic, and I believe it's going to be for a century that we'll be remembered. And the worldwide numbers are 98 million out of a population of 7.6 billion as of 2019. So you could imagine that. I think we're slowly approaching to 100 million count of COVID infections. I hope, you know, there is a healthy competition with the vaccine recipients that they surpass very soon. I'm not sure, but it looks like, you know, we are way behind. In terms of the deaths, you know, it's 2.1 million people that got infected died. So we're basically looking at 2.1% mortality. So that is really a big chance to take for somebody who wants to perhaps think that, no, okay, well, I'm going to take my chance. I'm going to get the infection and I'm going to be immunized. Well, you have a chance that, you know, you will die, you know, 2.1% time. So, but with vaccination, that's almost zero. And leading the way, the United States, you know, leads, and then comes the India and Brazil, Russia, France. These are old numbers, so I don't have the more recent ones, but the world figures are current. Let's talk a little bit about the history of pandemics. As you guys know, that I'm sure everybody heard about smallpox, but I'm not sure if anybody has seen a smallpox. That obviously shows the success of the first vaccine there ever was. And that was actually derived from cowpox. And as you know, Edward Jenner, some of you guys may know, he's the one that actually in Britain took a small piece of the vesicle of cowpox and he took and injected in a healthy individual. And that healthy individuals, after a little while, got another small piece of smallpox lesion into the same person. And interestingly, the person who had a cowpox so-called vaccination in the first time was immune to smallpox. So that was the beginning of this vaccination attempt. And so much so, the Edward Jenner was called as the father of immunology. And actually, at one time, you know, smallpox was a big event. You know, just to give a little history, in Boston, where a small community of 11,000 people, and almost like 55-60% of them were infected with smallpox, and 850 people died in those days. And currently, you know, we have no smallpox, and it was all the end result of 1972 large vaccination trials. So that was the beginning of vaccination. And I wanted to present to you about the AIDS, which was a pandemic. At one time, it was a 10 leading cause of death in the United States, and it still has got its grounds. But what I wanted to bring to your attention is this was a disease that's still present. We did not get a vaccine. but we were able to find the treatment, so effective treatment, so much so that I should say that as an infectious disease doctor, that you know, in a month or 2 months, I'm told that there's going to be a one shot per month deal to treat the AIDS, and that's such a tremendous progress we made in the treatment. So we not only need the importance of the stress, the importance of vaccination, but we also need the stress, the importance of treatment, because we have about close to 100 million people infected, and you know, 2% of them, 2.1% of them have died. And in fact, right now in New Orleans, we have patients pretty active, you know, a spike. I wouldn't say a big peak, but there's definitely increased activity in West Jeff and Touro hospitals. And I'm very happy to mention that the mortality has dropped down dramatically because we got so many treatments to offer. I also wanted to, since now this is a presentation from New Orleans, and I'm not sure how many of you will remember that, you know, New Orleans at one time is called as the necropolis, the city of the dead. We have had a tremendous wrath of yellow fever in 1817 to 1905. 10% of the city would die from July to October. And it's got a lot of history of our culture and America, where there was a black slavery that was pretty rampant, and the myth was that the blacks are immune, so they actually marketed the black slavery. It's very unfortunate. That's not true. And the reason why I'm also saying yellow fever is it is possible for those people that have been vaccinated with COVID-19, when you get your card, please save it, because thing is, it is possible that no, we may be required when we travel. It may be the requirement to travel, you know, all over. So yellow fever is still a traveler's requirement, you know, for vaccination to South Africa, if I remember correct. And so much so, the people that have never been infected with the yellow fever, they were called stranger's disease, because they come to New Orleans and they die and they get infected with yellow fever. So that was a bad disease. And look at, this is one of the pictures. It was so bad that, you know, people would bleed all over, eyes, ears, from their fingers. So much so that, you know, it was when the preachers, you know, go to do their last rites and stuff like that, they would be disgusted. In fact, the people that are dying used to use all foul language, filthy, because they were suffering miserably. So that was yellow fever. Thank God that no, we don't have it. So that is the impact of vaccination. Look at this vaccination. This is a more recent vaccinees that know that I've got. And unfortunately, you know, I don't have the more recent one. But in Israel, from what I heard yesterday, was they're up to 38% of vaccination of their countrymen. Just imagine, 38%, one out of three Israelites. I'm not sure if I'm going to say Israelites, but I would say those who are in Israel have been vaccinated. And there's even a small article that I read that has actually reduced their incidence of COVID infections. And as you see that, you know, you have second and third Middle Eastern countries, Dubai, I mean, UAE, Bahrain, they got the vaccine. They got Pfizer vaccine. I think in Dubai, they also have, you know, Chinese vaccines. So anyway, what I would like to say is that we are way down, like, I think it's like a 5% and maybe a little bit more, because thing is, this is an old number. So we need to get way up. A lot of people have the issues about the side effects. What about the side effects? Well, there were two deaths in India. This was an old information that they have received two different kinds of vaccines, Covaxin and Covishield. A lot of them have minor side effects. There were two deaths unrelated to the vaccine. And these are all the heroes that started. Dr. Klinsberg, he's the section chief of pulmonology at Tulane, and he's Greg Williams, the podiatrist, the friends of mine. And somebody asked me that, why don't you have your picture? Vaccination, what am I celebrating? This is, my aunt. She died young, 57 years old. It is so sad. Their family, of seven, extended family, five of them were positive. And one of the, or perhaps the only breadwinner, could not go to the hospital because he didn't have the money. They had to gather some, money to go to the hospital. And fortunately, he's alive and well. But what am I thankful for? This is another, Brennan's family leaving behind two young children. He's dead. There was a big myth that the Chinese numbers originally stated all the deaths were over infections as well as the deaths were over 65 years of age. That is not true. These are the two examples that I'm telling you. It is affected a lot younger people. It is my boy, Prakash, who's who's smiling, and he really is not smiling, actually, because he's infected with COVID. He's at home, quarantined himself with Brenham, and he started to be the big boy for this Camp Swan. And some of you guys know, through the foundation, that we have a camp. I'm hoping that Beth is here, so maybe very soon that we may have a camp in Gulfport. This is a camp for bereaved children between 7 to 12. Is a three-day, two-night camp with play therapy, music therapy, a lot of motivational activities. And it's just for the children to let them know that there are a lot more people around in a similar circumstances, that you're not alone. And I am telling you, this COVID-19 is going to generate millions of children who have lost their parents, grandparents, and a lot more. They got to be prepared. They're grieving. Thankfully, that the COVID has not affected children as much as the adult population. I'm actually going to go ahead and skip all the things about the how the vaccine works, but I want to just give you a timeline. As you probably heard about the warp speed, Operation Warp Speed. This is perhaps the reason why we credited to have seen the first and the second vaccines in a matter of 9 to 10 months. There was even some political discussion that perhaps there would be a vaccine right before elections, but it did not happen. It did happen in December, like in the timeline that we've had a Pfizer vaccine. And a week or later that there was a Moderna vaccine, and both of them are being used right now in the United States. And the way it is being distributed right now, we're in phase 1B, which is giving vaccination for people that are 70 and above, and healthcare workers. And they're trying to add these essential workers, like the there was a demand by the teachers and others, to be the, the essential workers. I'm not sure what's going to be the status, but with the change in presidency, I think, we may be seeing a lot more. The next phase would be 1C, where it would drop the age to 65 and maybe add some additional groups. And then eventually to the general public, where, you can go to CVS, Walgreens and get your shot. Which sadly is not going to happen till spring or maybe summer. And let's talk about it as to how we can actually enhance that, okay? So there are a lot of ethical principles that were projected, and one of them was it was a very short span we got this vaccine. And there was an issue about the safety. So far that millions that have been vaccinated, there's no vaccine-related death that I know of. And the last one, which is, to promote the transparencies, of course, that, the two vaccines studies of Moderna as well as Pfizer are reported in New England Journal of Medicine and peer-reviewed by experts in the field of virology, immunology, and all those things, and they've agreed for this vaccination to move forward. Whereas the other guys, like AstraZeneca, and there is a vaccine, from my own city of my birth, Hyderabad city in India. It's called Bharat Biotech. It's a small company that's actually done the studies of vaccination, and they have published in both AstraZeneca and this Bharat Biotech in Lancet. And we got to promote justice and mitigate the health inequalities. But unfortunately, we have so many myths and then fears that we're going to talk about that is it itself is killing, the vaccinees. And this is I think this is a more recent vaccination information. In the United States, we got 41 million doses distributed. Half of them were administered. So we still got a lot of doses that are still waiting. And I just heard that, in fact, the new president has released whatever the reserves that they are holding of the vaccine. So they're going to keep all those reserves out, because there was a concern that perhaps if we give the first dose, we may not have enough for the second dose. So they wanted to actually do reserve the vaccines. But then we're gonna get into some discussion as to why it is not important. Let's go and briefly go over a few information about these vaccines. Biotech is a vaccination company in Hyderabad City, India. They've actually come up with phase one, phase two, and they actually have a phase three trial that is actually millions of Indians have been receiving this vaccination of a vaccine in trial mode. It's actually been approved on an emergency basis as I'm not very clear right now, is it a research trial or emergency vaccination information? So we're gonna talk about it. Some of us may have some information about it. So essentially, in the phase one trial, there were 300 people vaccinated, 75% placebos, both sexes. They had no serious side effects, and they all had neutralizing antibodies, which are protective antibodies. And there was a 12-month follow-up. And this is a phase two trial, and they used like two different groups of 3 micrograms and 6-microgram vaccination. Again, no serious side effects. This is only like 6 months follow-up. They now have phase three trials of this vaccination that has been given. There's one study that's still going on with, I think, it's 20,000 people, but a lot of Indians have received to the tune of maybe half a million these vaccine, which some people complain that they haven't have the full efficacy data, but nevertheless, they have given. And to my knowledge, they have not heard about any deaths, but there are some minor effects. The Pfizer vaccine, as you know, studied 43,000 people, 21,000 vaccinees, and 21,000 placebos. So it's a 50-50. And there was a 95% protection. A lot of them had pain at the injection site. There was a fatigue, headaches, those kind of things in a 2 months follow-up. And as you see, this is the first vaccine that's been approved. And Moderna vaccine is a research trial, included 30,000 people. It was two doses, 28 days apart. And there were 11 cases of COVID infection in the vaccine group, as against 185 cases in placebo group. So obviously that there was a significant number of COVID infection, those people that did not receive the study vaccine. And eventually, I think, you know, the protection was 95%, and they, a lot of them had pain at the injection site, fatigue, headaches, such sort of thing. And the good news is none of them had a death. AstraZeneca studied 23,848 participants. They had two doses, 28 days apart, and there were 10 cases of COVID infection in the vaccine group and 185 cases of COVID infection in placebo group. And it included everybody, both sexes, and the main side effects was the pain at the injection site, just like the, any other vaccination, fatigue, headaches, and it had a 9-week follow-up and 62% protection. And then you have a Sinovac vaccine trial with the Chinese that they have actually, they didn't have enough, I guess I know for some reason that they actually did the study in Brazilians, Turkey, and I think in Malaysia, one of those places. So in Brazilian participants, they actually had 13,000 participants. They had a 50.38 protection. So you might wonder as to why should we use Sinovac. For a World Health Organization and even for FDA requirement, you need to have 50% efficacy for a vaccine to be approved. And so here they are. So I think, you know, Sinovac may be approved, but I'm not sure. And then there's another Chinese vaccine called Sinopharm vaccine that was actually locally manufactured and evidently has been studied in China. I don't know the details of it. There is actually a vaccine rollout information that somebody published. It says that, you know, vaccinating 1 in 5 people in hard-hit places, like giving priority to people over 60 years of age, could bring the death rate, I'm talking about just the death rate, not the infection, by 73%. So it is not only the vaccine is not only going to reduce the number of COVID infections, but it will reduce the death rate among those people that who may still get infection with the vaccination. Now let's now go ahead and then, you know, I'm going to give you a rundown of a few things and I'm going to close it and then invite, you know, discussion. There's one of the things that's very important is the conspiracy theory. I'm sure that some of you guys heard about the Tuskegee experiment, where they have injected the syphilis bacteria or spirochetes into the black men and studied the natural course of syphilis. And it's a sad medical history of this nation that it still lingers in the minds of a large section of Americans that that I want to assure them that as a physician and as a medical community, you know, in the leadership role, there's nothing like that that's going to happen, because we have such a extensive checks and balances. And sadly, that there are still some people that, you know, one of the janitor that I was talking to, and then he and I asked him, "Hey, why don't you take your vaccination?" He said, "Doc, oh my God, they got something in it." And in fact, he threw the blame on Trump and said he did something and they got it out so fast. I'm getting there. I'm not getting it. And that was his excuse. And I said, wow. And so do you need to still wear masks? Yes, you do, because these are not 100% effective. And there is a fear about the autism birth control measure. Those are all very unfounded and nobody knows where that's coming from. Thankfully, it is not that rampant. As you know that Moderna and Pfizer vaccines are RNA vaccines, virus vaccines. And what happens is that there is a concern that some people believe that, you know, they may actually create some autoimmune disease further down the line, because it is going to be like a genetic engineering. That is absolutely not true. This RNA virus vaccine is going to have a temporary message. It will not modify yourself. It's very important, like a DNA. But what about the J&J and AstraZeneca viruses? Their DNA used in their virus vectors. Virus vectors means actually the virus of adenovirus is used to develop this vaccine. And so there again, the message is temporary, and it is not going to have a long-lasting impact. And there is someone who I talked to was saying that no, blacks are immune about. Hello, that is totally false. And there are a few side effects, some people may have heard about. There were 29 deaths in Norway, and all of them were receiving the Pfizer vaccines. And the vaccine drive still continues, and all of them died, were terminally ill. So they actually probably had a lot of reasons that they're counting their days. And I am not sure no vaccine is related to that. And the country, has investigated and took a quick decision to continue with the vaccine drive. There were two deaths a long time back. And of course, this is actually a 1 week old information. There were two deaths in India also that think, that's unrelated to the vaccine. And as you understand that when we are injecting this vaccine in millions, there'll be some deaths. And that is probably not going to be related to the vaccine. So you have the Pfizer, Moderna, or the RNA vaccines, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, the DNA vaccines, or DNA derived. And I'm going to go ahead and hold off over here. I'm going to get back to the real screen and think, let's go ahead and talk. And I'm going to invite one by one. So let's see that if you guys want to go ahead. Just please, try to mute all of you. And one by one, if you can unmute and say words or add, whatever you want to say, because I have presented the history, I have presented the way vaccine is made, and I have presented these side effects, and I have presented the myths and facts. So any information that you have, this is a dialogue. So we want to make it, as effective by letting all of us, get into it and say a few words and see what you think. And, and also I want to let you guys know this Zoom is recorded, and we are going to actually modify into a YouTube presentation. And guess what? I am going to have it submitted to the National Library of Congress, whereby all these people that gathered over here have a serious concern to bring this COVID to an end. And this is what our children and their children needs to know, that we have done what we need to do to get this pandemic under control. So I'm going to go ahead and stop my lecture and invite one by one. So you can just go ahead and please identify yourself and go ahead and get started.
Yeah, Corey from Minnesota. Could you explain, maybe I missed it if you did, what was done different to get these vaccines on the market in less than a year? And how long does it usually take to get a vaccine developed? I'm from an orthopedic standpoint, I don't remember all that. Thank you.
That is an excellent question, but I think, I don't want to go back on this PowerPoint slides, because the thing is that, I'm very poor in technology. Just the smallpox vaccination that I just presented to you, it was a history of 100 years of development and vaccination and all those things. And you might wonder how the hell all this thing happened in less than, 1 year. 9 months. And that's one of the scary things for a lot of people. And the technology, there is an RNA technology that they used, especially the Pfizer. Pfizer actually started in the peak of the first pandemic in March, where they used RNA. You know, this is, by the way, that no, this RNA technology is, everything is synthetic. There's no natural, you know, virus biological agent involved in it at all. So they are trying to use a synthetic RNA derived vaccine. So the technology is such that they're able to generate, synthesize very soon. And I don't know exactly how many days or weeks they got it. And they got the phase one, phase two, and phase three trials in a, such an order, whereby October, they have got it presented to the FDA, and it got approved. So this was the RNA technology. And luckily, or I don't know, I guess the time will tell, this is all is a biotech marvel, where there's nothing that is live. There's no virus in at all. It's all synthetic. And that is the reason why that might actually give us a segue into a concern about the allergies. Now, there is a polyethylene glycol, which is one of the chemicals used in this synthesis, that may be responsible for allergy. And if so, what people recommend, or the experts recommend, is so far there have been a few cases of anaphylaxis, which is, as you know, that you know, people can die, you know, with anaphylaxis. But all the few anaphylaxis that have happened with these vaccines have resolved and nobody died of it. So I have talked to Dr. Penico in Gulfport, and then he has seen a large allergic reaction on the site where, you know, somebody got injected, and that he took care of it with steroids. So there really, you know, wasn't a problem. So to answer your question, this is the technology that got, you know, this vaccination out so fast.
Sheila.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the responses, that was a very good question, and that being asked everywhere, that why, how it has happened so quickly. One of the responses I have given to my patients and the friends is that in old days, the cars used to travel with this speed. Our computer used to travel with this speed. Nowadays, I'm holding this telephone in my hands, talking to the people all over the world with them. So we have come a long way in technology. We've come a long way in technology, how it works. So the way the cars travel, where the computers are made. So because of that technology, we are able to synthesize this thing, make the thing more quickly. So that's what my response will be, that the technology is different than it used to be long time ago when the other vaccines were developed. It took a long time. You could just see certain things with the microscope. So you were not able to see much more minutely than you were able to do it before. So for a simple person, that will be more understandable, that we have come a long way. It took longer time, more energy to develop the things earlier. Now it is more quickly because technology has come a long way. That's what you said.
Yeah.
So for a simple person, it might be easier to understand than describing that the messenger RNA, DNA, outside, live virus, not live virus, just telling them that this is because of the advances in technology. We have been able to do it more quickly than we have been able to do it before.
Today's episode is sponsored by the Akula Foundation and Canon Hospice. The vision and mission of the Akula Foundation envisions recovery from grief and loss through innovative programs for the community, providing compassion, professional support, continuing education, remembrance therapy, chronic illness, and palliative care services. Check out the Akula Foundation on Facebook at www.facebook.com/AkulaFoundation and on their website at akulafoundation.com. Now let's get back to Dr. Shiva Akula and his discussion of the COVID-19 vaccine.
I came in later in this Zoom meeting, but I don't know if you clearly answered or had any slide about the second shot of the vaccine. When you got in the first shot, since we know that there was no reserve or inadequate reserve, people might not be able to get the second shot up to 2 months, 3 months, or 4 months. Who knows? So what kind of immunity those people will have? You will end up losing the old immunity which you have, or you will still have the same effectiveness if you get the second vaccine shot later than it is supposed to be?
That's an excellent question. Dr. Arshad is actually a psychiatrist, so I think, you know, he's got his own story in a video and podcast about the mental health effect of this COVID-19. So some of you guys want to watch it, that's available on the akulafoundation.com. Now, the two things that, you know, I want to address, one of them is the technology. The old technology of growing the virus, killing the virus, and making it inactive, and then injecting, is the technology that has been used in Bharat Biotech in India. And they also have actually shortened their course of the trials in the sense that was the reason why it took a little bit longer. So they were not able to get the phase one and phase three trials, you know, sooner, but they already finished phase one and phase two trials. In fact, they published in Lancet that they had excellent immune response, the good old-fashioned way of killing the virus and injecting the viral particles back into the body. In fact, they are taking a next step, and that's the reason why they have used this Bharat Biotech in India to inject this vaccination despite the not completing the phase three trials. They're actually taking one more step. They're saying if a vaccine is injected on the arm, the antibodies are going to develop around there, but the virus infects or gets into the body through the nose and oral cavity. So they're actually proposing a vaccine study where, like the polio vaccine, like the drops, they want to put one drop in each nostril and see how the antibodies are developed, and they're going to block the entry of the COVID into the body. And so that is another trial that's coming up, and that's going to be exciting if you're going to have vaccination as a drops, and which is going to be a lot more effective. And as regards the reserve, it's a very good question. In fact, as a matter of fact, there's been, you know, some argument in the community where if we're not able to get to the whole countries and continents by summer or spring, why not we just use what we have? Don't worry about the second dose. Well, will it going to be effective? Yes. The number's not as much as 95%, because the 95% results are reported only after the second dose. So can the second dose be given after 21 days for Pfizer or 28 days after Moderna? Yes, they can be given 2 months later, 3 months later, whenever. They're still going to be protected, and they are going to contribute towards the herd immunity. And actually, you know, some of you may have already heard, herd immunity is like, it's like a sheep. You have a whole bunch of sheep healthy, that, you know, the sick ones, you know, are not going to, you know, manifest. So it's the same way that you got a lot of people, you know, already 100 million people infected. And hopefully we have more than, you know, 100 vaccinated. So both of them together, they're increasing the herd immunity. So I think, you know, coming back to your points where we do have lack of shots. So I think, you know, it may not be a bad idea to just hold off on the second dose and inject. In fact, there was some survey. I'm going to talk more about it. So I'm going to go ahead and close it and invite somebody else to see if they have any other introduce and say a few words or ask questions or if you have anything new to add.
This is Dr. Varathy.
I'm Amy Sandrigan, and I think that that's exactly the concern. You know, so originally it rolls out and you've got to get two vaccines, and you would have thought, if I were conducting the study, if I were conducting the rollout, if I gave out 100 vaccines, then I would have a list and I would make sure that those 100 people could get their second dose. So to find out after people have already gotten their first dose that no one prepared well enough to provide a second dose makes me think, oh, this isn't very well organized. Now, if it's not very well organized, then what was the process behind it? What safeguards does the FDA have? What safeguards do the pharmaceutical companies? So it's very disturbing to me to find out that there isn't enough vaccination in the reserve. And to me, it would make much more sense to do what was promised, which was you need to get a vaccine, and then 28 days, you need to get your second dose. But to leave people in this limbo, in this never-never land, where they got the first vaccine, but now they have to wait 2 or 3 extra months because there was improper planning, you must admit that it would have been better to present it as you get one dose, and then you can get the dose. I mean, just the lack of organization. The material I saw from both River Oaks and Odyssey House was you, Amy Sandridge, will get one vaccine, and then there will be a list, and 28 days later, you need to appear to get your second dose. And now that's changed.
Amy, I think that's really good. And it goes back to when you look at the Blacks, African Americans, who, you know, perhaps not interested in getting the vaccine, this would be one thing that would probably hinder an individual. So one thing that I would like to see is that show me the data, like put the data when we're looking at CNN or other areas, show the data of who's gotten these vaccines, show the diverse population, how many Blacks, how many African Americans, how many Asians, how many Caucasians who've gotten their first dose or who've not gotten a dose at all. And so if we can see that, I'm just going to give an example, that in this first dose, there was, you know, African-American, Asians, and Hispanics who got the first dose, but now all of a sudden they can't get a second dose. This one you mentioned about integrity, that check and balance, you're not seeing it. And what Amy's saying is like, you promised me one thing, that's the reason I got the shot, but now I can't get the shot. So that's right there, that trust factor is going down the hill. And then when the majority of the people see this, this is not going to be something good. So that's what something that I would like to see is show me the data, just like you're showing me how many people have been infected and died. Now show me how many people have gotten their shots. That's all.
And make sure that the people who got the first shots can get their second ones. And then since I haven't had one at all, I'll wait until the people got through in an orderly fashion. That seems fair.
Right. I agree with you, Amy.
Dr. Whittle, you had something to say.
Yes sir. I have a couple of comments and a question. And the comment is about the duration. Prior to Corona, the average time required for vaccine development was 3 years. And this was done in a warp speed because of a lot of money spent on the technology and already developed and existing technology, and the speed of the computers too. Somebody was suggesting. The second comment is this second shot issue. I believe there is something called as an anamnestic reaction. Dr. Shiva will know. This anamnestic reaction can be activated by second shot anytime, even after months or years. And that's what technology is used as a booster dose for MMR and other vaccinations. Those are the two comments. And then third is I have patients who are telling me that the health department is asking them to bring a letter from the doctor whether they can take the aspirin and still get the vaccine. And this is a question for Dr. Shiva.
Dr. Whittle, let me answer, this question about the allergies and the aspirin and that sort of thing. There is no contraindication that, if you're on aspirin, you should not be taking, vaccine. That's number one. Number two, like I said, the old-fashioned way of doing the vaccine is actually using the egg, to grow the virus. And thereby, I'm sure you heard from the flu shots, if you have allergy to the egg white, don't take it. That is not the case with Pfizer and Moderna, because these are synthesized chemicals. There's no biological part in it, period. So that is very, very important. I want to repeat that if you were concerned that, I had allergy to the egg white, so I cannot take this shot. No. Pfizer and Moderna got you covered. It is all artificially synthesized. And that's why some people, even some of the scientifically minded individuals argue, boy, this is bioengineering, where we're going to be cloning. We may be, like somebody's got a chip, where he's going to put in this million. the big brother is going to use the supercomputers to, watch everybody has to, what's doing. Hello, this is a amazing technology. Nevertheless, the RNA imprint that it leaves in the body is only to provoke the immunity against COVID, and it will wane away. It won't last for longer. We don't even know if it's going to last for a year, because we may need to do this, because there are a lot of information that are still unclear how long this is going to protect, even this vaccines. We are hoping it is 1 year, so it will be something like a seasonal, but it could be longer, because it's a new technology. So to answer your question, aspirin, I wouldn't worry too much about it. And if you're allergic to egg white and all the stuff, don't worry about it. It is not grown in the egg white. And the other thing that they recommend is, if somebody has an allergy, they still can take this vaccine, and they recommend like a half an hour wait to make sure that they're not getting anaphylaxis. I think, anaphylaxis has happened, but all of them have recovered. So there's no death that's been reported so far. So thank you, Balwittle. Go ahead. Anybody next, please?
Okay. I'm on the Zoom meeting on the vaccine. One of my classmates.
Let's invite Nadmeh. Do we have any others that wants to pitch in? And like I said, I'm trying to have this Zoom meeting recorded, and we are going to actually present it, submit to the National Library of Congress. So it will be your legacy to let your children and their children know what you have done to improve the use of vaccination in America.
Yes.
So
Can I share something? So I was actually sitting with one of the elderly senior citizens that I work with when the commercial came on about the study being done in New Orleans. They have a large sample that they're doing. So the news had said that lots of people from New Orleans were going to be contributing to this national study. So I thought, well, that seems like a good thing for me to get involved in because. You know, all my clients, the senior citizens, had not had the vaccine yet. And I have already worked with two men in their 90s early on in this who ended up having COVID. And I was tested, and I even had the antibody test, and I was always negative. And I keep getting the test. So I decided to go and be a part of the study. And one thing that attracted me to it is it's two people get the vaccine and it is synthetic. And then one person is the placebo. So you have a greater chance of getting the vaccine during the study. I took the first one. I didn't have any problems at all. But they did tell me that they had more people have some reaction after they get the second one than the first one. So we'll see, because that's coming up on February 8th. So I just wanted to share that if anybody's interested. They're still enrolling people.
Thank you, Julie. I think, you know, as a matter of fact, you're probably referring to the MedPharma. It's actually run by Dr. John Froh.
Yes.
And I worked with Dr. John Froh myself. And in fact, sadly, he was infected with COVID himself. And he has a story that we did a podcast YouTube presentation of his life, of his research, and then how he got the COVID and how he's doing right now. So what he has currently is, I'm also actually participating in some of his studies.
Okay.
So the way that, you know, it is actually, you're probably looking at a Novavax company study that has actually done phase 1 and phase 2 trials with some improved results. So he actually is trying to enroll people. Already, you know, that one might ask a question, hey, listen, there's a vaccine available. Why do you need to do the research? But unfortunately, not all people are getting the vaccine. So there are a lot of people that don't have the vaccine, and they can join this research study. The only problem is they're not going to get 100% vaccination. It's only 2 out of 3, you know, they'll get vaccine, and then 1 out of 3 may get placebo. So that is the only problem with this research study. But nevertheless, the earlier phase 1, phase 2 trials of the Novavax that I know of, you know, I talked to Dr. John Froh, had excellent results in producing the antibodies. Neutralizing antibodies are the ones that are protective antibodies against the COVID infection. So that is the very positive news. And overall, I have seen several the vaccine. I've read about, you know, a lot of these studies, trials all over. India, China, wherever, a lot of these vaccinations do have a positive effect. And the good news is, overall, there's not been a death reported with any number of trials that are ongoing right now. That's the greatest news. Because there was somebody suggested, well, what's the big deal? I can get COVID infection and then get immunized. I get antibodies. And hello, if you want to do that, you're going to get sick, you're going to go stay home, you're not going to be able to work, and you have a 2% chance that you may die. And especially if you have the medical problems, then you could die faster and a bigger number. Your odds are going to be a lot higher. So I think, you know, the people that are thinking that, oh, no, I can get a natural COVID, you know, it's going to be so mild that I'll develop antibodies. But let me explain to you. There are, you know, nursing and other staff that used to work with the COVID-19 patients. They all thought oh man, you know, I had a little bit of cold or I have something like that. I must have got the antibodies. Surprisingly, a lot of them did not have antibodies. So it has been at least my reading that you not only need to have just a little mild COVID, you got to have a good kick with the COVID to get the immunity. You're just not going to get it by, you know, like being around with somebody who may have had a COVID. So it's very important. So the people that are healthcare workers, especially that have developed antibodies, they may have had a good bout of COVID to develop antibodies.
This is
so you were saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You were saying with the COVID, there's not anything by like being a little bit pregnant.
No. Well, you know, the good news is the technology is advancing in antibodies also. Now we have a antibody titers. Just like the hepatitis B, you can get the titers. And if your antibodies are, you know, certain level, then you're good to go. But if your antibody levels are low, you could get, despite not being COVID positive. So that is the thing. And in fact, as a matter of fact, CDC recommends for even those people that have been infected with COVID to get the vaccination. But it would be in the best interest to wait at least to 30 to 60 days or maybe longer because they already got the antibodies. And the other concern that I have is that I think...
One question. Is that true the people who are still were just diagnosed with the COVID and are going through the symptoms? One of my classmates in Chicago, he called and he said that he got diagnosed with COVID. He was sick and he learned that about COVID status after he had gotten the first shot. After he got the first shot, then he learned that he had got the COVID just 2 days. His results came back. Now he's pretty sick. He's recovering, fortunately, but he's still pretty sick.
I think, you know, it. Dr. Arshad raises a very important question about people who have got the shot, if they get infected with the COVID. No. Like I said, it is a artificially, you know, chemical, you know, vaccine is a chemical thing. There's no biological component to it. So there's no way it will cause COVID infection. Number two. In order for the COVID antibodies to develop after vaccination, you got to have 10 days. 10 days after the first dose and 7 days, you know, after the second dose to get the antibodies. So there has been reports of COVID infections within those period of time that you may have gotten the COVID, you know, just a day before and got sick with COVID. That's because you haven't developed antibodies quite yet, you know. And like Julie mentioned, or someone mentioned that the second dose is when you're going to have some more adverse reactions. You know, that is that's a common observation that I've come across quite a few people that have said that in the second dose, they've got more aggressive symptoms of, you know, body ache, and fever maybe, and those kind of things. So that's the case also.
And Ms. Gamble had something. I interrupted her. She was trying to talk at the same time. I was. Wasn't it Ms. Gamble who was trying to talk at the same time? So maybe she had something to say.
No, I'm okay. Yeah.
Well, I did want to say, add that very recently, my very dear friend did pass away due to COVID. And she had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis her entire life since she was 11. And she was a miracle because she outlived every other juvenile rheumatoid arthritic to be 66. She was the oldest living juvenile rheumatoid, and she knew medicine as it pertained to her illness so well. And she's has a book that she was going to be, you know, she's got it with the editor and all about her disease process. And it's just heartbreaking to me that COVID is what happened, you know, that she came so far with her illness, but she was at tremendous risk, you know, and so it's very personal to me. And she's just one of the many, many sad situations, sad stories that people are experiencing.
Julie, I think, you know, it is very personal to me as well, you know, as my son is COVID positive, you know, and Brenna's family, you know, Michael died, you know, so young in 40s. And then my auntie died, you know, in mm-hmm. 50s. This is very, very personal. And I just want to dedicate this presentation to their spirits, you know, to let them know that, yes, we are doing everything and anything that we can to catch up, to boost the immunity of the whole world. Thereby, we can stop, eliminate, you know, this COVID infection, just like the smallpox. One day, I'm sure, history will recollect exactly what the planet has been through with COVID and how it got wiped off. And I think, you know, the kudos to the technology where they're able to find the solution so fast. And that's the beauty of it. So
I'd like to respond to that, Dr. Akula. I think that, and I don't mean this to be harsh at all, but I do feel as though there are some elements of guilt being put in there. So when people say, you know, I had a loved one who died of this, therefore you, Amy Sandridge, need to get a vaccine, I kind of go, I'm not sure if that works that way. It doesn't really matter whether I buy in to the vaccination strategy. That doesn't help anyone else not get the disease, as long as I do my part and I am not a super spreader. And this ethos is coming at us from a variety of places. So for example, in the New York Times last week, there was an article. I'm not even sure if it was, it didn't say it was an editorial. It didn't say it was an opinion piece. It said it was an article about how people weren't getting vaccinated. And the final paragraph was, if you want to be able to hold your grandchildren, then get a vaccination. And I'm sorry, but that's not a news piece. So the pressure from people that in order to be civic minded, I need to go ahead and get a vaccine, to me, is not a persuasive argument. The persuasive argument is, just like you said, is it effective? Is it going to be dangerous for me and my risk factors? And all the other trappings, I try not to make my decision, because that wouldn't be scientific, that wouldn't be rational. But I just wanted to share that I'm not sure if hearing about how someone else's loved one has died of this is connected to the vaccine.
Yeah, I don't really think it is. And the interesting thing about this person is she didn't want to ever have the vaccination. And she was very she wasn't really big on the mask, you know. She had her own opinions about things, whether I agreed with it or not. It was her opinion. And so it was a lot of irony in it for me. But certainly, I don't think that it's very controversial to some of this stuff, you know, that's going on with, you know, you should definitely have the vaccine. So you can't hold children or get close to children, or you can't get close to elderly if you don't get a vaccination or whatnot. I don't know about all that. You know, I can't really comment on that, but I don't know.
And there is a little hypocrisy involved with that too, because the truth is, wearing the mask is more protective of other people than if you got the vaccine. Unfortunately, the people who oppose wearing the mask are the first in line to get the vaccine.
I was asking Dr. Koo, you want to, just go over again about, you know, the second dose may have a greater, you know, adverse effect. And why is that if it's the same, you know, stuff that's inside of the vaccine when you got the first vaccination?
It is actually, I think, you know, Ms. Campbell has this question as to why there are more side effects after the second dose. And it is unclear at this time as to, these are all observational information. It is not a scientific study. So it is very unclear, but it makes sense. Of course, we're trying to use the judgmental mind or the logic in the sense that you have a clash of antibodies, one from the, you know, previous immunity, and then the second one, second time. So it's like a little clash. We may have like a little, more side effects, not to the point where they would go into anaphylaxis and die. So I think it is really a containable, but it has been an anecdotal response that I've heard, from several others, that they've got, more side effects during the second time around. In fact, I guess I can pitch in my experience with my second dose. I felt a little bit more, like a little body aches than the first time around. But there's not, because, there are millions of people that are being vaccinated. So there's going to be a lot of information that's going to be available. So unfortunately, you just listen to all this CNN and, New York Times and all those things. So those guys are going to take bits and pieces. So we need to actually listen to The Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine. But how many people read that? In fact, even the doctors don't read that.
So everybody's not as smart as you are.
No, it's not really smart, but I think, it is the American ingenuity that they insist on the medical community to go with the standards. And the standard of research in America is New England Journal of Medicine. And rest of the world is Lancet. Just like the Pfizer and Moderna, they publish their data in the New England Journal of Medicine. And whereas AstraZeneca and this biotech publish their data in Lancet. So it's a dichotomy. And I'm actually going to go back to this legacy issue. And as you know, Kaleem, that you put in your story in a podcast on a YouTube, I wanted to invite all those that are listening right now that there is an ongoing project of recording your stories. All stories matter. All of us have issues, problems, messages that you want to convey to your future and their future generations. So if you got interest in trying to record a story of yourself, 15-20 minutes, not more than that, just like a little blips as to what was your life before COVID and what it is now, we are willing to record it. And we already have about 32 stories right now, and a lot of them are available for people to link on the coolerfoundation.com.
So you're saying after today, we'll all be able to say we made it to the Library of Congress?
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Koo, would you agree that in layman's term, that some, a grid or showing stats, because we really need to get a diverse population immunized. And without that, get that vaccination. But we need something else. We need more to, even if it's leaders standing up, showcasing that they've gotten a shot, not only the first one, but they received the second shot and they're doing well, and a whole family. So there's something else that we need more. That I don't see enough of that. I've agreed to participate in the Veterans Affairs, the VA here in New Orleans, their trial study. So I agreed to do that, and I'll be doing that soon. So just to showcase others, not only a female veteran, a woman's veteran, but a person that I believe and I trust in what's going on right now. But there's more that needs to be, that showcased in layman's term.
I think, you know, you raised a very important ethical value, which is equality and or distributive justice. Be fair to all. And the vaccine, you know, is new. And very sadly, you know what? Actually, I'm going to share this thing. That way, I want to show my point.
Thank you.
This is the one that I want to share with you, and I want you to focus. Look at this. December, 18th or something, where the immunization started. And all of a sudden, you got a peak of, and actually Israel is 38% as of yesterday. 38%. Look at the one below. United Arab Emirates, Dubai. And they're using Pfizer vaccine and Sinopharm vaccine. And look at Bahrain using Pfizer vaccine, American ingenuity, technology for people that have the money. And I wanted to present to you that there is a dichotomy. Look at all these countries, Israel, UAE, Bahrain, UK, US, very, very Africa. Where is Zimbabwe? Where is Kenya? Where is any of these countries? So that actually brings to your very valid discussion that I think there is going to be, and here I'm going to present to you the information about the cost, because I believe all of us needs to be involved in the cost-effective care. Moderna and Pfizer vaccines range anywhere from $35 to $45 for two shots. Whereas AstraZeneca, that is manufactured in India, is only costing $3. So you're going to have, here, now I've thrown in, of course, Ms. Campbell, you throw in the racial inequality. I'm throwing in more relevant information right now to the planet. Is a rich versus the poor. The rich can have the richest scientific traditions, benefit of it. They can enjoy it. What about the poor? Where is their turn? When are they going to get it? World Health Organization has put together a very similar effort, put some money in all this stuff. They haven't gotten the vaccine pool to be distributed to these poor countries. So I think, there is a need to generate immediately all kind of vaccines, anything over 50% efficacy, to get them out as soon as possible and make them available. And I bet those generic ones, of course, the Pfizer and Moderna, they did not share this technology with India. So thereby, there's no room for generic. So mRNA technology is harvested as a rich scientific tradition of proud nation called America. But if you want the whole world to be proud, we got to do something to get this number of vaccines out first. Because in America, when I was reading that there's a survey, there's about 160 million people that wants a vaccine now. They want it now. But how can you get it? Pfizer cannot manufacture that many. Moderna cannot manufacture that many. Somebody, that manufactures the massive amount are the guys that really needs to have this technology that will be available. And in fact, I also wanted to recognize AstraZeneca, as a company, they have put forward their profit to be just the cost basis. And that is the reason why they have affiliated with the largest manufacturer of vaccines called Serum Institute of India to to go ahead and manufacture them. So much so, I was told, I was actually watching a video that those guys at the Serum Institute of India are manufacturing these vaccine, the AstraZeneca vaccine, at the rate of 5,000 vaccine per minute. 5,000 vaccine per minute. So they want to get them out. And in fact, their goal is 1 billion vaccine by middle of this year. So I hope, you know, that happens. And if it happens, and of course, they're going to share with, you know, like poorer countries. And they got, you know, like, and already that, you know, they've already sent them to a lot of countries, you know, around the world. So I think we need to share this technology. You know, we brag about it. And the racial inequality, you know, may be there, but I believe it is more myths and fears that, you know, that is exactly what we want to dispel by conferences like this, where we openly put the facts in, you know, ahead and let people know that they are reassured that this is a true savior for you to, you know, stop from getting COVID.
Well said. Thank you, Dr. Kulam. Well said.
And thank you guys, you know, for contributing towards this. And it's a great effort. And I just want you to know.
I just want to say thank you for inviting me. And I also, you know, thanks Dr. Corey out of Minnesota and Commander Randy down in Illinois. And we have Kayla, an RN, as well. She's down in Oklahoma. So she was she's on. I think she may be the iPhone. So just kind of get folks from different parts of the world who've experienced different thing. So thanks, you know, to them as well for jumping on. And this was awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you guys. And appreciate y'all taking some time to put forward your ideas. Hopefully, you know, we can multiply this and try to communicate with a small group of people to reassure them that it's okay in order to get the vaccine. And one more thing is that I think, you know, we possibly, maybe, you know, I need to regather in trying to put forward the resources of where to go get the vaccines. Because I believe in 3-4 weeks, we are probably going to be able to have a lot more vaccines available. And hopefully that, you know, if they approve another AstraZeneca vaccine, maybe some other vaccines, then we'll have a large variety and there'll be an incentive to generate, you know, produce more vaccines. So I'm trying to see that, you know, there's going to be oversupply and the demand, because we only understand the supply economy. So hopefully that will happen and happen very soon. And we'll probably say goodbye to COVID. Bye, y'all.
I'm Singing Lisa. Thanks for listening to the Focus Podcast, where we inspire, motivate, empower, and impact. Be sure and check out the show notes in the description on how to learn more about my guests today and connect with them. Also, subscribe and leave a comment. You can listen to the Focus Podcast on your favorite platforms, including Spotify, Google Podcast, iHeart, iTunes, and Radio Public. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay focused.